The quiet, the still after the big blast. It's accurate. It's accurate. I don't know what geopolitically speaking, this whole Ukraine war is getting to be an issue of mixed messaging. Mixed messaging. Most of the people living in the Don, I won't go into this much, but most of the people living in the Donbass understand that Russia is not trying to roll up Ukraine and end it. The Russians have now exterminated over 500,000, half a million human beings fighting in the Ukrainian military. And its positions haven't changed. So I know the people over there are very frustrated. I know a lot of Russian citizens are. And then North Korea's Kim and the meeting with Putin. North Korea is allegedly going to send 300,000 to 500,000 troops to assist Russia. And it's just crazy. And I just get this feeling that there are several different agendas being played out simultaneously, and the people have no idea what's really going on, which is not unusual. If you want to see an issue of where the people have no idea of what's really going on, look at the COVID vaccination history in this country. Not only is it not a vaccine by any stretch of the imagination, but the new one that has just been released onto the unwitting public is out and available now. And it is not being called a booster. Everyone's calling it a booster. But the CDC doesn't like that. I'll explain that in just a second. See if my number one is there. You there?
I am. I'm listening intently.
I can hear you just with bated breath. Isn't that it? All right. Here, listen to her. She's slinging it now. Okay. Early in the COVID pandemic, as signs of waning immunity and changes in the virus prompted the rollout of additional doses of vaccine. Listen to how they've rationalized history and rewritten it here. Health authorities took to urging Americans to seek out booster shots to improve their protection against the virus. Now, with an updated vaccine formula rolling out for the fall, officials are changing that message and don't want to use the word booster anymore. Instead, doctors and health departments are now working on getting used to calling this year's newly recommended shots the 2023-2024 COVID-19 vaccine, or simply the updated COVID-19 vaccine. Now, if any of you can repeat that with ease, I'll be shocked. They're just mixing. It's all getting, it's like a soup bowl full of chaos. And then it's an ad right underneath it. It says, looking for the new COVID vaccine booster? Here's where to get your shot. So the messaging is so complex and confused now. It's crazy. The CDC, Dr. Keep, K-E-I-P-P, Kipe? Hell, I don't know. Dr. Talbot. Members of the CDC got together and said, bye-bye booster. We are no longer giving boosters. And it's going to be very difficult to stop using that word because that word has become pervasive. Well, you think so, Dr. Talbot? You've got a future. Good job. No, it's all nuts. Nuts. We don't know what's really in this injection. We know it's not good for you. And it has basically the same spike in it, which we know is a killer. Now, they've tweaked it a little bit, admittedly, and whatever they've done to tweak it is not going to be good for us. I think we can count on that. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I wouldn't make any assumptions about what's actually in it.
No. No. What the hell's in it, really? Who knows?
We don't know. You know, there's no oversight, no third-party testing or verification.
No, they tested it on 20 mice. 20 mice.
Right. Well, that was Pfizer, wasn't it? Didn't, yes. I think Moderna had 50 actual people.
Yeah.
And there was only one serious adverse event.
Allegedly.
But that's good enough. Yeah, allegedly. But they're willing to acknowledge.
Well, they're throwing these tests out right and left now. Get tested. Get tested. We need to spend a little bit of time on the idea of tests. What are tests? And do these tests even work? That's another issue. And there are people out there who are very firmly stating unequivocally that the tests don't work. They don't test for anything. In other words, it's a fraud. And that there's something to be said for that.
Well, it was all predicated on that test. And, you know, when I first heard it, I knew what a PCR test was. I couldn't believe it. You know, it's a tool. You know, if you're really struggling to figure out what somebody might be suffering from, you could use that to help arrive at a diagnosis. But you certainly wouldn't make a diagnosis using that all by itself.
No.
And to have people, you know, quarantined and declared infectious based on that, a 20 nucleotide sequence in somebody's nasal cavity, that could be common to any number of bacteria, pathogens, even human cells, debris. Now, I know people who had gotten a PCR test that never got the results of their PCR test.
Were they going to a dumpster somewhere?
Well, that makes you wonder, what were they using them for? What was it, you know, as some have speculated, you know, DNA harvesting, maybe?
Exactly.
Or were they introducing something into people's
We're still back to where we were, yes, over 2.5 years ago. The PCR test is not a valid measurement of infection, contamination, or viral activity. It just isn't. And then we've got the antigen test, which is being pushed around now, I guess, is the best test to use. But the former Pfizer vice president and science director of Pfizer, Michael Yeadon, he doesn't like that test at all. He already knows about the PCR, of course. Let's listen to what Dr. Mike Yeadon has to say about the most common and current test to determine if you have COVID.
There was not an increased cause of death.
What? So what about, in the U.S., CNN is showing all these hospitals, but showing overflow, you know, claiming that they're overflowing emergency rooms and people sick in the hospital, that the hospitals are overwhelmed with people sick with COVID in the hospitals. True or false?
False.
So what they did is they found the one hospital in America, or do you think it was all made up?
Oh, in terms of an overflowing hospital?
Yeah, so if CNN says, hey, you know, these hospitals are overflowing, and they go and they do their reporting, are they actually constructing a hospital and doing it like
MASH or something?
Well, not MASH, but I'm thinking of the entertainer movie with the song.
Oh, okay.
Was it the Sting? Is it like the Sting where they set the whole thing up
I think it's worth saying that I didn't know this in 2020, but I learned it shortly thereafter. Do you know what the most potent stimulus for increased illness, you know, loss of health status in a human being is, other than actually giving them something that will make them ill? But if you weren't able to give them something that would make them ill, do you know what is the proven best way of making them much more likely to become ill? It's to frighten them. Chronic fear kills. If you get farm animals, lab animals, if you put them in the position where they're highly stressed, frightened, you know, anxious, you know, they don't have a place to hide, you know, where they need to be, or they don't have an opportunity to socialize and something, they literally just die. And humans are just the same. So I think we suffered from all the normal illnesses amplified by a deliberate policy of high propagandized fear. and it really works.
But we know there's Sanger sequencing that is done, and the genomic sequences match SARS-CoV-2.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, hold on a minute. We're going to get to the actual test comments in just a moment. Hold on. I want you to pay close attention here, because the other voice in this is Steve Kirsch, and he's going to say something in a moment which tips his cards fully about where he's coming from, what his frame of reference is, and what he wants all of us to think about in terms of mainstream media validation. All right? This is important. Then we'll get to the test results. So hold on. Okay. Now I'm going to just sort of join it in progress. You'll get it. Oops. Hold on. All right, the screen just dumped on me, of course. I'm going to have to go back and get it. Okay, any comment on what he said about fear? That is of very important consideration, the idea of fear. Fear does a lot in people.
Well, they knew what they were doing when they were flashing these images on the television screen to these people and painting a picture of a very deadly and lethal virus.
Well, that gives me a perfect opportunity to mention what you and I have talked about many, many times, and that's very simply that if there is a hemorrhagic form of anything that's released, like Marburg or a Marburg-like virus, in which people are they're infected and afflicted to the point that they're bleeding out of their eyes and their ears. Can you imagine the fear factor if they begin on the flat screen mainstream media to show people who are bleeding from their eyes and nose and ears? Wouldn't take very many images, and the fear factor would be through the roof. This is Halloween stuff. It's worse. I guarantee it.
There are still people out there who are deathly afraid of catching COVID.
Yes. And that's not people with masks on out there. A lot of them are just taking proper care of exposing themselves to as few pathogens in general as they can. And wisely so, especially if they're vaxxed, because they've got vades. Their immune system is wide open to all manner of things. They should be wearing N95 masks. Probably first and foremost. And then the shedders right with them, of course, are those who are worried about the shedders, I should say. That's the truth. All right, here's back. I want you to hear this. When Steve Kirsch makes his remark, I mean, if you can't connect the dots here of where he's coming from and whose agenda he's pushing, and he's giving validation, and he's completely underwriting the idea that the mainstream media is real and is honorable and cares about us. This is very telling. It's coming up in about, it's very short.
Person in them, and when do they arrive, and so on. And he showed me that in the summer of 2020, and he said, I've never seen the intensive care facility so empty. And part of the reason for that was, I don't think it was a pandemic, and people were advised not to come to hospital. And then the major thing that happened is, because of the pandemic, elective surgery almost stopped. So in the summer, they would do bypass surgeries, varicose veins, and even more invasive surgery.
None of this made it into the BBC, for example?
Did you get that? How come none of this made it into the BBC? Well, that must be Steve Kirsch's, one of his bedrock examples of a fountain of truth. Oh, my. Au contraire, that was quite an interesting statement. Here, 109.50. I'm going to play that again. I want you to get this. This is important. If you listen carefully to these people, you can find out what their real agenda is. And if he's citing the BBC as an acid test of truth and reality,
And then the major thing that happened is, because of the pandemic, elective surgery almost stopped. So in the summer, they would do bypass surgeries, varicose veins, and even more invasive surgery.
How come none of this made it into the BBC, for example?
Sorry?
How come none of these empty ICUs made it on the BBC?
Oh, Steve. Okay, I'm probably going to come across as a conspiracy theorist, but as I say to people, the bloody well is a conspiracy. There's nothing theoretical about it. A small number of big companies own almost all of the mass media in the world. I think it's like less than 10. And I think those 10 are in on it. They're probably through the World Economic Forum. They probably held a sidebar and then made it a policy. It's like you're going to basically there'll be a line to take. That's always been true. The media follows lines to take.
Okay. So why didn't this make it in the BBC? If that doesn't really give you an idea of one of Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s foremost advisors, along with Dr. Robert Malone, where they're coming from, nothing will. Okay, that was very important, and I was rather surprised. This guy's very slick, very cool, but he put both feet in it with that one, in my view.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's hard to imagine he's saying that with a straight face.
He did, twice.
Yeah.
All right, let's go back now. We'll listen to Mike talk about the actual tests. Oh, damn it. I don't know why it just keeps kicking me out.
Too many windows?
No, I don't know. They're just sitting there. They shouldn't be. Right, I'm going to go back up to it here. 58.
Yes.
Hold
and so
on.
The line
57.
Is
there. Okay, here, I think we got it.
How much of the global crime?
You can take samples from me and we can do Sanger sequencing on those samples and compare it to the SARS-CoV-2.
Can I just make a comment at this point?
And then I could then do the same thing. Mike, I don't understand why nobody would.
Mike Eden, the guest, had to ask twice, may I make a comment? And twice, he was ignored. No class.
Mm.
This is not the way to treat a guest on an interview program at all.
I'm very happy for you to do it. I'm personally, I can't be bothered. It's
no, I get that.
What's
I get
going
that.
On is a global
but
crime,
mass murder.
I'm communicating. The public are not very interested in the lateral flow. By all means, pay someone to do it.
No, but the claim is that these COVID tests, which everybody gets, and their mass distribution, and people use this to say, I got COVID. I mean, that's a really important thing. If the test is wrong, it could really bring down the narrative. And I'm saying, if the test is wrong, it's easy. It seems that it's so easy.
Exactly.
To...
No, I agree. It is. And I would say it's almost certainly... nonsense, that test, almost certainly. Because here's the thing, how much of any one thing would there be in the sample from your nose compared with all of the other potentially detectable materials? It's going to be, it'll be a tiny fraction of the bulk of biological materials that are being chromatographed by the few drops through this lateral thing. I've developed myself, this isn't PCR where I hired people who have done it. I've done these tests. What you would need is something that's exquisitely selective and very, very potent in terms of binding. And where did they get that from? We don't know. They get it from a donkey, because that's quite common. You might vaccinate a donkey and then you would have, donkey anti SARS, whatever it is. And even then they would get a piece of the alleged pathogen, and they would usually bind it onto something else. So,
okay. Anyway, you got the idea. He does not think, he knows the PCR is useless. he does not think these antigen tests are showing anything. And that now they're beginning to test people, and they say, oh, they found six high school football players on a team had it. I think if they were to test these people like 3 months ago, they might have come up with the same ratio.
Oh, yeah.
These tests are just worthless.
Yeah. It's a game.
Showbiz.
We never did this before. It's a game.
Showbiz. Yeah. So anyway, I hope you were able to... I had jumped around in that a little bit. The screen kept kicking me off, and I had to go reboot it every time. But I think you got the idea. Mike Eden is a man of great character, of great professional expertise. No one's 100% perfect. No one. Not me, not you, none of us. But we do our best, and Eden is holding up, I think, a very big portion of reality and the truth here. And people should pay close attention to most everything he says. So there you go. Why wasn't in the BBC?
Agree.
Why wasn't it in the BBC? What? That's like saying, why wasn't it on CNN? The same thing. It's actually worse. All right. Now, the non-booster boosters are out, and we're looking for stories of people rolling up their sleeves, which we're sure it's happening. We haven't gotten any preliminary results yet. In certain areas, the shots won't be available till Monday, apparently. So they're putting them out. But no question, they were tweaked, these new vaccines, the non-boosters. They were tweaked. What did they do with them? If this is a biological attack on humanity, they made them more effective in terms of achieving the goal they want. They didn't adjust them in our favor. They're still owned by the Department of Defense, the Pentagon, and they're still trying to force people to take them. That in and of itself should tell you an awful lot.
Yeah, I was surprised. I came across a figure last week where somebody mentioned that there's still a significant number of colleges and universities mandating that their students...
Yes.
Have a current vaccine, COVID-19 vaccine.
Absolutely correct. Yep.
Incredible.
It is incredible, all of it. Okay, now, let's see what happened here. 22. All right, we have a doctor named Vaughn, and we're going to listen to a little bit of Dr. Vaughn. So go ahead and set this up for us. He's being interviewed by Cheryl Atkinson. She's a veteran journalist, very, very good at her job, very good.
Yeah, you may have heard me mention Dr. Jordan Vaughn in the past a few times, pertaining to him being essentially the only one, I guess there's two others now in the U.S., that is qualified, has the equipment, along with the training, to be able to detect these amyloid clots in people who have been vax-injured or suffering from long COVID. It does require a special type of microscope and staining and how to read these reports. And I know at least one individual who's had this done, and his score came back the worst. It's graded from 1 to 4, I believe, and he was at a 4. Anyone that's suffering from any sort of fatigue issues and has either had COVID or the vax probably should be evaluated for these types of clots. He does have a protocol that he puts people on to ameliorate these clots. I don't know if it gets rid of them entirely, but it makes them manageable, and people who have gone on the triple therapy report remarkable improvements, at least for a period of time. And then I don't know if they just adjust to that new baseline of what feels better or normal.
Sounds like they almost overcome it somehow or neutralize it to a degree.
I think it's such a stark difference compared to what they had been suffering with that it feels wonderful. The individual I know who was put on the triple therapy after having these clots analyzed, he said it felt like he'd been cracked open, like as if there had been glue throughout his entire circulatory system. And this just opened everything up.
Hmm. Interesting description. All right, here's Cheryl Atkinson with Dr. Vaughn. All right, this should work. Okay, here we go.
What we call long COVID, persistent injuries after COVID infection, and what some are now calling long vax, which are injuries that persist after vaccination or crop up months or years later. They can have similarities. So people may think, I didn't get vaccinated, I don't have the problem, or I did get vaccinated, but I didn't have problems right away. All of these people may be impacted.
Exactly. And I think the fundamental pathogen, and we'll talk about this probably a lot tonight, is the spike protein. And in fact, what made COVID so dangerous is also what makes the vaccine something that also can cause significant issues. Because again, the spike protein itself is what's unique. It's what makes the damage. And it's what truly is the pathogenic mechanism of this virus. And unfortunately, I guess the powers that be chose to use that same spike protein, and in fact, a pre-conformational form of it, to vaccinate the population with.
So you're getting it either way. You're getting it with a COVID infection, or if you're vaccinated, your body is being told to make this problematic spike protein.
Exactly.
We'll talk more about the science in a few minutes, but we're going to be taking some questions from viewers in this town hall this evening. So let's do the first one from Beverly. She says, I've received the Pfizer vaccines and boosters. I've lost my sense of smell. I've heard that from a few people. I also experience a lot of coughing since having COVID, especially at night. Could I have clotting issues?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, one of the places that is probably the most dense for the angiotensin receptor, which is what the spike protein engages with, is in the sustenuculus cells of your nose.
Okay, please speak English.
So yes. And so again, a lot of the ability for you to smell, as well as the ability for you to breathe in and out, depends on small vessels operating properly. And if the small vessels are full of abnormal fibrin, and it basically, what I would say, sludges up the system doesn't work well. Even things initially like cough. Cough is a symptom that a lot of people have. It's related to something going on in the lungs. Now, we always typically associate it with the respiratory tract infection, but just as likely, it can be a sign that your lungs are trying to get rid of something on the vascular side. It can also be that it's repairing. So a lot of times, post-infectious coughs aren't necessarily something that is you're spreading anything, but instead, it's a signal that there's something happening in the lungs, and especially the lung parenchyma.
Can you summarize why, in pretty simple terms, we think that so many people put on respirators early on died, and why that basically doctors and ERs quit doing that after a while?
So the initial thought was that this was a, you know, typical kind of acute respiratory disease. And in that case, actually, a lot of the damage is done in the actual airway part of your lungs. But the other part of your lungs, just as important, if not more important, is where the vascular system interfaces with that airway. And that's where the damage was happening with COVID. And especially one of my kind of mentors out of South Africa in June of 2020 said, we're barking up the wrong tree. He said, this is a vascular problem, not an airway problem. And he was right. And then one of the worst things you can do to somebody with a vascular problem with the lungs is to increase the pressure in the lungs, because you're just going to close off more vessels.
With a respirator.
With a ventilator, exactly. And that's why most of the bad outcomes, I mean, basically, in many ways, a ventilator was a death knell. And the other thing about the clotting was, the one thing that was kind of a signal to us was that a lot of people that were already on anticoagulants or antiplatelets were the people that survived hospitalization. Typically, those aren't the healthier people in a population, but for some reason, there was some protective effect that it offered them.
So there's something about, are anticoagulants blood thinners, or that's a subset? So people who are on blood thinners to begin with and weren't that healthy going in sometimes had better outcomes after COVID, and people were trying to explain why that could be.
Exactly. Yeah, and I think that's one of the things. A lot of times you have an observation in medicine that gets you to ask a question, because usually the people that were, you know, more morbid, in a sense, they had more medical conditions and when needed to be on blood thinners in the first place, why did they have better outcomes? And the answer was the pathology of the actual disease itself was related to clotting.
Okay, interesting comments. You notice he did walk around the simple fact that ventilators murdered, killed, slaughtered hundreds of thousands of people. They're gone. I wish doctors would, I guess they can't, for reasons that are fairly obvious, but they can't just tell it like it is. This was a mass death operation, and people knew at some level that those ventilators were the worst possible thing to do, and that they took people out time and time again.
They sure did.
Latest stats, over 20 million dead worldwide. I think that's way understated, and should be probably four or five times that at minimum. But they do say, along with that figure, that over 2 billion people have been severely injured by these injections. 2 billion of the 8 billion, 25% of the world population, severely injured. Now, those people are probably going to be involved with long vax, which may have a very unfortunate outcome for them, because this whole thing just is like a slow wind down the clock process, and you just run out of time. You get too many things that are wrong with your system. Your blood turns to blue-black sludge, and you did hear him mention sludge-like, and in terms of the loss of smell, but you can take that systemically. Any organ is going to be fed sludge. It's not going to work well. It doesn't have the oxygen content in it. Many other things are wrong with it. And then the heart itself is being worn out at probably two or three times its normal lifespan by having to push this sludge through a circulatory system that is highly compromised.
Well, and every organ and tissue is suffering for lack of oxygen.
Everyone. Yeah. Okay, next we have, we're 2227, Dr. Pierre Corey, and what's he going to tell us?
Well, she asked Jordan Vaughn what they're doing to help people at this point that have these afflictions.
Uh-huh.
And he offers his perspective on how to go about treating them. And then Pierre Corey comes in and really gives a good overview of what he's having success with.
Working, and we've got to figure out a way to help them.
Joining me and Dr. Vaughn of MedHelp Clinics is Dr. Pierre Corey. He's a critical care physician and founder of another independent clinic treatment center called the Leading Edge Clinic. He's also president and chief medical officer at the Frontline COVID-19 Critical Care Alliance. Thanks for joining us. Now, while Dr. Vaughn was making his discoveries with his patients, were you finding similar things with your patients?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, I started the pandemic in the ICU, and actually one of the first papers I wrote back in April of 2020 was really on the hypercoagulability, or the real strong propensity to form clots. And this is in the most severe forms of acute COVID. So we already knew that there was really severe clotting problems going on with these patients. Later, when I went into the care of these patients with long COVID or long vax, it's extremely complex, but like Dr. Vaughn has identified with his colleagues, we understand that the clotting problems are a major cause of the pathogenicity, or, you know, pathogen is something that causes illness or symptoms, and that's a main driver. But I will say, though, that this syndrome is really complex. There's a number of other dysregulated systems that have been triggered by the spike protein, including a dysregulated immune system, which could also, you could tie that back to the lack of proper blood flow. And then beyond that, you know, the clotting problems, or even just the clotting problems, are complex, because one of the things that we noticed, and I happen to be an expert on the drug called ivermectin, is that the red cells themselves tend to clump together. There's a receptor that gets triggered by the spike, and you see these clumping of red cells, which is not a common issue that we've seen in medicine. And ivermectin actually kind of dispels those clumping. And so, as Dr. Vaughn was saying, the sludging of the blood and the poor blood flow in the microvasculature, which can be at the root of so many different symptoms, we see a number of different agents that can improve it. But it's all really acting on the sludging of the blood and the clumping of the cells.
Well, the sludging of the blood and the clumping of the cells. Yes, and when you look at the destruction of hemoglobin in the blood, what's left of it, you understand that the body no longer has the mechanism to transport oxygen from head to toe. It's just not there.
Yeah, I know. The life is in the blood. It's never been more true.
We said in the very beginning, I know repeating it, we said over and over again, this thing has so many different ways. It's so diverse. Tentacles of destruction. This weapon is awful. And we were saying that in the beginning. And it's proven out to be true and then some. With two plus billion people on the planet now having suffered severe vax injury, we have, those people are going to need help. They're going to need care from caregivers, from a medical establishment that in many ways doesn't know what the hell it's doing. And this is bad.
Mm-hmm.
2 billion people have been injured and their lives will never be the same. Think about it. And that's not in your flat screen, mainstream media, BBC, tabloid news, is it? No.
No, they've moved on.
Yeah, the whole thing is so vile and evil.
Indeed, these people are persona non grata.
Right. Okay, we have another one. Let me see if I can find it. Did that take off too? The next one was 2626. You remember what that was?
Yeah, this is what I was thinking the last one was. They get into a little bit of detail about how they're treating their patients.
Okay.
Well, and the challenges, they are medically complicated. There's no question.
Right. When we go back and think about what Mike Eden said, the lateral flow test, that's what the current COVID test is all about. It's a lateral flow. And he made clear in an earlier portion that he could find nothing as a professional that suggested that lateral flow test was accomplishing or achieving anything. He was completely down on the whole thing.
Well, again, you know, these types of things are good for screening or pointing you maybe in a direction of if somebody has symptoms, trying to figure out what's wrong. But to make proclamations about somebody's health or infectiousness or anything based on that test it's heresy.
Heresy. It's that and then some. All right, here's your 2626.
Watching today and wondering if they know somebody or if they may have some of these problems, what are some treatments that can be done? I'm sure every case may be a little bit different, but what are the general treatments you're finding can work? And I'm going to ask Dr. Corey in case there's a difference.
So a lot of what I do is look into the coagulation issue. So a lot of it is really addressing two things. One is platelets, and platelets are part of your, you know, if you were to look at these things forming kind of complexes, think of the platelets kind of as the bricks and the fibrin kind of as the mortar. So you kind of address both of those issues and tilt the body toward fibrinolysis, which is a fancy word for let's get rid of this sludge. And that's usually what I do. Now, I will say there's a lot of things that have been very helpful, just things like aspirin, things like natokinase or peptase that have fibrinolytic properties that are things that are in foods and other health supplements that we've had for a long time. Those are things that I use as well. And so a lot of what we, basically me and Pierre, use is a mixture of things, a mixture in a good way, to address the different areas that the body's been targeted.
But Dr. Corey, if people have gone to their doctor and the doctor's looked and said, I don't see any clots in your blood, and I know people that have been told this that have ended up with microclots that I guess couldn't be seen. What is your advice if someone feels like they've got a dead end, they can't really keep going to their doctor and insisting their doctor's wrong? How would you recommend they get treatment, and what kind of treatments do you recommend?
Yeah, I mean, I first addressed that problem because it is really distressing for a patient. You know, the challenge with the syndrome is so many of the tests, standard traditional testings, do not reveal an abnormality, yet the patients remain very ill, and so they're looking for solutions. What we know, and I really, you know, I want to put a call out that I really think that we need a new specialty to study the disease of what I would call spikeopathy, because it's not only the clotting problems, but there's a number of other pathophysiologic processes that are triggered. And so I address, beyond the clotting, there's a number of other things that I've found effective. So for instance, and I'll just list some of the mechanisms that we know. So macrophages, which is one of the immune cells, that gets activated to become hyperactive. We also have another immune cell called the mast cell, and they all many of them develop mast cell activation syndrome, which actually can be triggered by clotting. We see a lot of mitochondrial problems. That's what makes all the energy for the cells to remain functional. And so I address things that kind of suppress macrophage activity, suppress mast cell activity. Ivermectin has so many mechanisms that, in my experience, it's the most commonly effective drug, meaning I get a positive response in the highest proportion of patients with ivermectin. It's not everyone. I would say in my practice about 70% of patients are ivermectin responders, some very large responses, some much more modest. But that's proven to be a very effective drug. Another one is low-dose naltrexone, which has also a number of immunomodulatory properties, and patients find great benefits from a lot of their nerve pains, sometimes fatigue and brain fog. And then we also use things that suppress mast cells. So those are common medicines like antihistamines, things like Claritin and Zyrtec, and then Pepcid, which also has histamine blocking. And then we use things that stabilize mast cells, some medicines that are a little less common like ketotifen. And so what I'm left with in a lot of patients is I'm able to get them better, but it takes sequential therapeutic trials, and sometimes their medication lists will grow. And if you look at the history of the disease, which really what is long COVID and long Vax, it's almost identical to a long time described disease, which is called myalgic encephalitis or chronic fatigue syndrome. And if you look at the literature on that, and you look for the treatments over decades, it's very poorly studied. Not a lot of advances have been made in therapeutics, but you tend to see long lists of things that have worked. And this is what I found, that in the treatment of these patients, is that almost everything I use that I use works in some percentage. Nothing is 100%. And sometimes I'll see two patients, they present identical. Medicine A works great in the first patient and doesn't work well at all. And so it's very hard to understand what is the predominant mechanism that's triggering their symptoms. So sometimes it really is trials. But I will tell you that what is our guide? We use safe medicines that have long been used, have excellent profiles of safety, and I put them on trials. I get a sense of when I should see a benefit. And if I don't, I get rid of it and we'll try something else. But I'm trying to relieve suffering. And I got to tell you, we generally get consistent successes, but sometimes it takes quite a few attempts.
What was one of the interesting things Dr. Corey just said was that microclotting triggers mast cell activation, which is what Erica first brought out a couple months ago now or whatever. She made it real clear that mast cell activation is one of the problems that just is not talked about, and it isn't.
It is in the long COVID sufferers.
My point is it's not accessible and available to most people because they look into the wrong sources. They're not looking at the right sources, so they never hear about it to speak of. Go ahead, please.
No, even before the pandemic, even before the bioweapon release, mast cell activation syndrome was only really just being acknowledged, kind of in the fringe of standard medical care. So there's still, I'm sure, plenty of doctors that are not familiar with it and have no idea how to treat it. But it's very, very prevalent now in these vax-injured people and many people who have had the infection itself, the viral infection. And I would say, and a lot of these people who are suffering shedding illness actually have mast cell activation syndrome. And it won't get better without treatment. I mean, first you've got to avoid the trigger, which is most likely the spike protein that's being shed by the vaxxed. But to try to tame that response that's up to the person that is being afflicted by it. Because it can progress from there. It can get much worse. So it's a matter of taming that immune response, taming the nervous system. And, you know, the nervous system is invariably entwined in this reaction. And a lot of the symptoms that these people are having are neurological.
By
these buzzing sensations and...
Yeah, they actually suppress it. They're trying to suppress the mast cells. That's one of the ways they deal with
it. Well, they're trying to block either the release of the mediators or the receptors for the mediators. And there can be up to 1,000 different mediators that mast cells can release.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And they will all have a different set of symptoms. So it's not just histamine. It's not just feeling like you're having an allergic attack.
Right.
It can be the bleeding that we're seeing in women, bleeding and cramping. That's an indication of certain mediators that are being released from mast cells in that area of the body. So the list is rather extensive, but
so
it takes a commitment.
Angles.
Yeah,
so
it takes
aspects.
A commitment from the patient to want to overcome it or manage it, because, well, unless you want to live in isolation, that's about the only other alternative you have. Which may
well,
be
that's
the,
something. Go ahead.
Yeah, that may be the given that this is a toxin that they're reacting to, that may be the better choice.
That's
stay away from it.
Now, here, this dovetailing to that is the obvious potential, and we're not saying we know what's going to happen, but if history is any evidence certifying this, all those who are going to take these new shots, the boosters, the vax, they're going to be shedding. Remember, it's 2 to 3 weeks usually after the booster for people to calm down from a hyper-shedding state. They're dumping stuff right and left. So when you're out and about, you need to be real careful if you're around people who have been injected. And you're not going to know because people are not going to tell you. They don't wear a tag. Yes, I got my new 2023 booster. They don't say that. So time to be careful. And as Erica just said, self-isolation is not a bad idea as much as you can do it.
Yeah, and the other, advice right now is to avoid the places that are actually giving the shots, the pharmacies, the big, Walmart, Costco. I don't know if they give them there, but you know where they give them. And I would steer clear of those places for a while.
Oh, a while.
Avoid them if
months.
You can.
Months.
And
right,
any stores that are nearby, because they come out of the pharmacy and then what? Go into, I don't know, Stop and Shop?
Whatever.
Yeah.
They got stoas all over the place. And, hell, they may be even giving shots in the stoas soon enough, or gas stations, or barber shops. Who knows? We've got one more little clip here. This is the last one. And Cheryl is going to ask Dr. Corey and Dr. Vaughn for their opinion on what, I guess, can be done.
Help, because they just don't know where to go. There are places online. Each of you has a website. Can you just give me 10, 15 seconds, someone searching for answers or something to show their doctor at home? What would you say?
So we the foundation that we have, the Microvascular Research Foundation, I think is going to be something to really go and get data. Unfortunately, my overall ability to take care of people is limited because of just time in general. But I'm hopeful, first of all, that patients take, a little bit into their own hands and try to figure this out and try to seek help. Find a physician that cares about you and knows you, because then they'll notice the difference and be able to hopefully help you. And I think Pierre is a good example of someone who's kind of stepped up and started to do it even more.
Just a few seconds. What can somebody do if their doctor may mean well but not understand where the resources are?
I would lead the doctor to my nonprofit website, which is FLCCC.net, and to go to the iRecover protocol. It's not so much a protocol, but it's a good guide of mechanistic-based therapies that we know work.
Okay, there you go. Those are their
recommendations. That wasn't it.
Oh. Did I
keep
cue
going.
It wrong? Okay,
no,
more.
Just, we're almost done.
Here we go.
And then it's for the doctor to start doctoring. But we give a lot of information on how they can approach their patients and help them.
Are you telling your patients just individually recommending whether to vaccinate with a new booster or not? What are your...
Well, first of all, I think, as Dr. Whelan pointed out, I think Moderna's 50 people on one and 50 on the other. They didn't even... it was all people that received either the bivalent or the monovalent. To me, that study in itself is inadequate to assess safety and efficacy.
You might say
no
that.
So far.
So, until there's better data...
I'm going to go much stronger. These vaccines have unleashed a humanitarian catastrophe. They've been ineffective. This is the most toxic protein I've ever studied, and it's unleashed an epidemic of chronic illness. And I would not recommend any further COVID vaccines using this platform.
You've all given us a lot to...
Okay. The most toxic protein ever studied, that he's ever studied. And this goes back to Dr. Chetty. It's the deadliest thing that mankind has ever created. The most
sure
dangerous
is.
Thing, I think, is what he said. Look, we've been told, the word has been out there. It hasn't been front and center, but we've tried to underscore it and represent it as often as we can here to help you make better choices. Remember, it's ultimately up to you. Don't go to your doctor and say, heal me, doctor. You need to be prepared to do your own research and do listen to these programs. All of them are worth listening to, and spread them around, share them, please, and help people help themselves. All right, anything we missed here? That was very good. I'm glad you, I didn't know where to stop that one, so thanks for the push.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, good closing words.
Yeah.
They are a disaster.
The deadliest
thing
he's ever
studied. And we're all
going to
pay the price for it. Yeah.
Deadliest.
It is.
No joke.
It is.
And tying that into official AMA, CDC therapies and therapeutic approaches such as ventilators, for God's sakes, and remdesivir, you know, you've got it. It's a perfect formula for the genocide. It's right there.
I don't know how people can't see by now that these are criminal organizations.
It's Satan's own. You got it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, dear friends, that's all we have time for tonight. Thank you, young lady. Talk to you soon. Great job.
Okay. My pleasure, Jeff. Good night, everyone.
Right. We'll be right back with hour 3 in just a few minutes.